Hey guys, today is going to be the Catpatrick Forgotten, chapters 3 to 6. Chapter 3. The house is still. It's early. I check out the bedroom, trying to pinpoint differences between two nearly identical pictures. The one I remember from tomorrow and the scene before me now. There's an empty mug with a used tea bag wound around the handle on a coaster on the desk. There's a sweatshirt hanging over the edge of the hamper like it's trying to get out. Tomorrow the mug will be gone. There will be textbooks on the desk. The hamper will be empty. I hold a note that explains what I've missed. Well, at least the highlights. October 17th, Sunday. Outfit. Super soft boys hoodie. Fry note said I got it from the reject pile at school. Black leggings, Sherpa boots. School, bring band-aids for almost healed blister. Bring yoga pants, t-shirt for gym. Had to borrow off clothes from Paige Friday. Cell phone, mom has it in the car. Other stuff, I was in LA this weekend with her dad. Avoid Paige this week. Doctor this morning, trip Friday in PE. I set aside the note and read through similar messages from the past week, paying particular attention to Friday's comments on clothes and school stuff. Then, still feeling like I'm walking into the world partially blind, I hold myself from bed and start the day. On the way to the doctor's office, mom takes Hudson Avenue, which cuts through the city cemetery. At the intersection of Hudson and Washington, we get caught at the light. We're going to be late, my mom mutters under her breath. She strums her hands on the wheel, and I wonder if she's missing a meeting to drive me. I lull my head to the right side and scan the graves. They stand in formation, lines running straight away from me and then curving slightly in the distance. The light turns green, and as the car speeds up, a movement catches my eye. Two people, a man and a boy, stop before a tombstone. In my rational brain, I know they're visiting a lost loved one. Nothing scary. But something about the mourners makes my shoulders tense and sends a shot of electricity through my body. I shiver in my seat. My mother doesn't notice. Do you remember what you're going to say when the doctor asks how this happened, Mom asks, interrupting my thoughts. We're turning into the parking lot now. Yes, I reply, grateful for the distraction. I tripped over a bowl in gym class. Good, she says, before getting out of the car. I follow. We clear the parking lot and the lobby quickly, and then ride the elevator up two floors in silence. All the while, my mind is still in the graveyard. Chapter 4. Doctor's appointment? Yep, I say, smiling in my most innocent smile at Hen Fezenbinder, school secretary and obvious lover of cats. She frowns in response as she types something into my computer. File with nails so long, they'd have to open a soda can sideways. I hop a little, hoping she'll hurry up. I want to get to my locker before class lets out. Fewer opportunities for mistakes that way. In a hurry? Henny says. Nope, I say, trying another smile. She frowns again. Finally, Miss Fassenbinder finishes typing and shoves back in her swivel chair. She opens a cabinet and easily locates the file with my name on it, and then inserts the note my mom wrote just minutes ago. I assume that Miss Fassbinder will wait until I'm going to compare today's handwriting with that from previous days. Turning around, I check the industrial clock mounted on the wall behind me. It's 9:52 a.m. The bell will ring in 3 minutes, and I'm nervous about that. For some reason, I've missed PE, study hall, and pre-calc. Not bad. Finally, the secretary offers me a hall pass and I take it, but not before noticing the tiny decorative cats affixed to her nails. It looks like they were innocently walking through bright red cement when it set and trapped them forever. Poor cats. I hoist my bag on my right shoulder and bolt from the office. I speed walk across the commons, ignoring the badly bruised ankle noted on my doctor's notes, and start off the main hallway bordering the library. Halfway there, the end of third period bell rings, and I'm swimming upstream through distracted students, hand-holding couples, and cliques whose members might as well be wearing t-shirts that say, "Don't even try to get around us." I try to avoid eye contact with everyone, but sometimes it's impossible. Paige Thomas, looking like she just got out of bed, approaches from the opposite direction and waves at me with what I consider to be a little too much enthusiasm, and waves with me, waiting for me to reply. For a beat, I have no idea why she's so happy to see me. I shift my bag to my left arm so that I can quarterly wave back as we pass. Then I remember, cordially waving back might be too sudden. Soon she will corner me and ask me to set her off with Brad from math. Ugh, who am I, Cupid? Where the main hall intersects with the pathways to the math and science wings, Carly Lynch and her circle are blocking the hallway. They're all in black and red uniforms, and a few squad members are actually taking notes as Carly speaks. As I pass by, I notice a little tiger's mascot temporary tattoo high on Carly's perfect right cheekbone. I imagine her staring in her mirror this morning before school, trying to get the tattoo just so, which makes me giggle to myself. Carly sees my expression and her eyes narrow. She makes a show of scrutinizing my outfit, then proclaims, "Hey loser, props on getting yourself into a semi-decent outfit today. Did you buy it at Kmart?" Clueless as to where my clothes come from or why Carly hates me so much, I feel a lump rise in my throat. Even though I have the benefit of knowing that I'll grow more beautiful each day and that Carly will never look better than she does right now, the comment stings. Just when I think I might lose it in front of the cheerleader, Colt, someone grabs my hand. "Let's go," Jamie says softly, before pulling me around the squad to my locker. "I don't get it," I say quietly. Jamie shakes her head as she opens my locker door for me. I unload my book bag and take deep breaths in an effort to brush it off. While I do, Jamie leans against the locker next to mine, looking alarmingly like a hooker. "Hey, Ma," Jason Rodriguez says to Jamie as he passes. "Nice legs." "Thanks," she says back with a twinkle in her eyes. I look at my friend thinking that I both admire her and worry about her. Despite knowing how things will turn out, Jamie is effortlessly surfer girl pretty, even though she will never hit the waves. Her chin length, dark blonde hair looks like she washed it in salt water and then let it dry in the warm sun, and her eyes are ocean green. She's stick model thin, tanned, and sporting bare legs on a very short skirt with no tights. In October. Down the hall, Jason high-fives his friend. I don't even want to know if it was about Jamie. Jamie will always be that girl. The one boys love to flirt with, not date, and girls love to hate. And I will always be that girl's only friend. "How did it go at the doctor?" Jamie asks. "I can't believe you fell again. You're such a klutz." "Ha ha," I say sarcastically. "The doctor was fine. He didn't ask much, so I didn't have to lie." "That's good." "Yeah," I say, retrieving my Spanish book. "How's your day?" "Ugh, the worst," Jamie begins, as I slam my locker shut. "I got detention. What for? We had a history test and I didn't study. So I gave Ryan Green's paper a tiny peek, and all of a sudden, Mr. Burgess was standing over me. Anyway, detention starts at the ungodly hour of 7 in the morning, and I have to go for like 2 weeks. Doesn't that seem a little unfair to you? Not waiting for me to respond, she continues, I don't even know where detention is. I guess I better figure that out before 7 tomorrow. Jamie is quiet for a second, and then something pops into her brain. Hey, she says, hitting me softly on the arm. Why didn't you warn me about Mr. Burgess, about getting caught? You had to see that one coming. I guess I didn't, I say, shrugging. It wasn't in my note this morning, sorry. That's okay, Jamie says. After tomorrow, I'll no longer be a detention virgin. We laugh, and I think to myself that this won't be the last time Jamie will see the inside of the detention hall. However, it will be the first time she'll flirt with the detention hall monitor, Mr. Rice, and the beginning of a sordid affair that will end in his divorce and Jamie's being sent to an all-girls camp this summer to learn the difference between right and wrong with the help of poetry, pottery, and Jesus. Jamie rattles on while we move towards Spanish. We're nearly the same height today because I'm in high boots, but she walks taller with confidence and meets the eyes of passing students. I watch the shoes as they go by, imagining who might be wearing them. White cross trainers with laces and swoosh that exactly match the school's crimson. Too easy. Cheerleader. Adidas tennis shoes with athletic socks. Male soccer player in the off season. Notice the hairy legs. Are those bedroom slippers? Come on. Ooh, here come some red cute boots. They're Western meets modern, and I want to borrow them. Who could it be? Maybe next year's homecoming queen? Lisa something? She's trendy. Unable to stand the suspense, I look up to find that I'm wrong. The girl in the boots is Hannah Wright. I can't help but smile because Hannah's future is bright. In just a few years, she'll be a country superstar. Too bad I can't tell her. Back to my game, I see brown Converse All-Stars coming towards me. Actually head on towards me. But before impact or identification, Jamie tugs me out of the way. We've made it to the Spanish corridor. Were you playing that stupid foot game again? She asks, dropping my arm. I shrug in response. Well, you should watch where you're going. You almost got run down by that weirdo, she says as we walk into Miss Garcia's classroom. What weirdo? I ask, intrigued. This morning's note mentioned nothing about a weirdo. That weird guy you were talking to during the fire drill. Jack. Lance? Whatever. You know, the guy who just moved here. He looked like he wanted to talk to you just now, but you were too busy looking at his feet. It doesn't matter, because you shouldn't be associating with weirdos. You're already weird enough as is. Jamie turns and gives me a silly grin before the bell rings and ends our conversation. When Miss Garcia grabs a dry erase marker and begins writing today's class agenda, I lean over and whisper gently to my best friend. Jamie, you look pretty today. Thanks, London, she says with a soft smile, before turning in her seat towards Anthony Olson, who is very openly eyeballing her legs. Chapter 5. It wasn't a dream. I wasn't asleep. Almost, but not quite. There in that space between resting and REM, the image slammed into my head like a freight train. Now I'm sitting up straight, blinking furiously, as if that would make my eyes adjust more quickly. Breathing heavily and sweating, even though the heater's turned down low. As it will be every night for as long as I live here. Like that gory photo in my anatomy book that I'll encounter in a few months and can't stop thinking about it already. The memory won't go away. I want to walk down the hall and crawl into bed with my mom. Instead, I try to self-soothe. I take at least five deep calming breaths, maybe more. I identify every dark shape in the room as non-threatening. Finally, I burrow back inside the still warm cocoon between two oversized pillows that form an upside-down V at the top of my head. Feeling a little better, I trick my brain to thinking about other things. The annoying doctor this morning, Jamie flirting with Jason, Jamie flirting with Anthony, white shoes, red boots, silly slippers, black shoes, brown sneakers. Wham! My eyes are open wide once more. I try shaking my head. I try thinking of the shoes again. I even try thinking of other unpleasant thoughts, like Jamie's upcoming situation. Nothing works. Exhaling slowly, I decide to let my mind go. Trying not to think about it is only making it worse. I pull the blankets up to my chin and blink into the pitch black bedroom. And suddenly, I am in a cemetery. Being there makes me shiver now. I'm at a funeral. At least I think I am. I can't distinguish much except for hazy black shapes that could be people and neutral stone behind them in every direction. In my nostrils, the unmistakable scent of fresh-cut grass. It could be 8:30 a.m. or 3:14 p.m. It's overcast. I can't tell. I don't understand the scene, but it makes me feel heavy just the same. And alone. And afraid. I consider whether to turn on the lamp and add details of this memory to today's notes. Right underneath, musings about the weirdo that Jamie mentioned. But ultimately, I stay where I am. It's obvious that the mourners today triggered this particular memory, but knowing why doesn't soften the blow of the harsh underlying reality. I remember forwards. I remember forwards and forget backwards. My memories, bad, boring, or good, haven't happened yet. So like it or not, and like it I don't, I will remember standing in the fresh-cut grass with the black-clad figures surrounded by stone until I do for real. I will remember the funeral until it happens, until someone dies. And after that, it will be forgotten. Chapter 6. I'm early to study hall. I changed out of my gym clothes quickly in order to dodge Paige Thomas' simple request. Which is silly because I remember when it happened. Not today. But still I rushed. I skipped the pointless trip to my locker near the math corridor and voila. Here I am. Early. This must be out of character for me because Miss Mason is eyeing me like I'm something disgusting she's been asked in jest. I smile at her and she looks away. More students arrive. I take the pre-calc textbook and workbook from my bag, as well as a red mechanical pencil. Thankfully, none of the other students sit at my table, so I can spread out. I begin the homework that this morning's note said I neglected to do last night. The other students are chatting among themselves, getting in those last bits of gossip before the bell rings. "We meet again," says a smooth male voice out of nowhere. I figure he's talking to someone at the next table, but I look up for my work anyway. Then I suck in my breath. The boy standing there across the table, looking like he's going to sit down with me, is flat out gorgeous. "Hi," I say more question than greeting. "I didn't know you had study hall this period," the boy says, casually dropping his bag onto a chair and pulling out the one beside it. He sits down, his eyes never leaving me. Do I know him? "Obviously," I say back, which comes out sounding a little snippy because I'm preoccupied. Am I in the right place? I scan the faces of my classmates. Annie Berenstain, check. Hannah Wright, check. Tomorrow is Wednesday, so today is Tuesday, check. Second period, yep, I just had PE. The boy's talking again. Because after the fire drill, I had to finish orientation, and it took up all the second period too. But you weren't here yesterday, were you? Where were you? I'm tapping my pencil in my notebook now. This conversation is making me anxious. I think back to my notes before answering. At a doctor's appointment, I say, adding no additional clarification. Oh, sorry, the boy says, glancing down at the table for a moment. I didn't mean to pry. He looks embarrassed. It's cute. It's okay, I say, still tapping my pencil. I tripped over a bowling gym. My mom thought my ankle was sprained. Was it? Nope, just bruised, I say. I'm tapping faster now. He's still looking right at me. Right into me. Seriously, do I know him? That's good, he says. The bell rings, and we're still staring at each other. Him looking amused, and me probably looking like I'm going to explode. At least that's how I feel. You okay? He asks, with the slightest nod in the direction of my furiously tapping pencil. The acknowledgement of my nervous energy makes me fumble. I lose my grip and the pencil launches into the air and then falls onto the floor. Feeling like a complete idiot, I scoot back in my chair and bend over to retrieve it. I grab the pencil and on my way back up, I spy something interesting. Chocolate brown Converse All-Stars. My heart leaps as I remember this morning's note. This boy is my weirdo. My weirdo is hot. Somehow I manage to sit straight and scoot back to the table without completely humiliating myself. I smile at him, he smiles back, and I smile more. So, you stole my sweatshirt, you know, he says with a glint in his eye. You can borrow it for a while as long as you... Shh! Evil eye Mason interrupts with a sharp whisper from her perch. Promise to... Weirdo attempts to continue in a whisper before Miss Madison smacks her palm on her desk. Mr. Henry, she shouts. Weirdo's mouth slams shut, and he grudgingly looks her way. I'm happy to know at least part of his name. Sorry, he says. I should hope so. You're new, so I'll give you a pass this one time. But understand, son, there's no talking in my classroom. This is a time for studying quietly. This is not a social hour. A couple of the other girls giggle softly. Miss Mason kills their giggles with a glance. She reminds me of a bird, a very mean bird. Sorry, the boy says again, before pulling a pad and some charcoal pencils from his bag. I'm happy for all the information I'm getting. His last name is Henry, he's new to school, and he's an artist. Before going to work, the boy smiles at me once more, while I'm left gooey from the sentiment. He opens his drawing pad and flips through his few sketches in search of a blank page. I can't help but notice both that he's talented and his subject of choice is intriguing. Ears? As if he can hear my thoughts, Mr. Weirdo Henry brushes a stray wave from his eyes and glances at me one final time. He shrugs and smiles slightly, as if to say, so what? I like ears. I shrug and smile back. What I'm trying to say without words, and what I hope he understands is, hey, we all have our things. He's back to drawing before I can give it another thought, and I'm forced to continue my math homework in silence. But halfway through problem number 3, something dawns on me. The boy's sweatshirt in my room has to be the one Weirdo Henry is talking about. Apparently, it's not from the reject pile, like my note said. So apparently, I lied. At midnight, I boot off my laptop. I can type faster than I can scribble. Besides, the notebook at my bedside is already cluttered with hearts in the margins and flowery words about a boy I just met today. October 19th, Tuesday. Horrible memory popped into my head as I was falling asleep tonight. Worst I can remember, really, can't see much, just know I'm in a crowd of people wearing black. Their faces are muddy and someone is dead. At first I thought it might be Mom's funeral, but then I remembered hearing her sobs. She's there too, alive. Can hear the occasional bard and weeping. The weeping is terrible, so I focus on the bards. I think it's mourning, but it's gray, so I'm not sure. Terrifying statue of a saintly woman, maybe an angel? One plot over to the left, carved of green stone, and looks like she's watching us. I finish typing and save the file on my computer desktop, naming it, appropriately, Dark Memory. I print the page and then place the type note under the handwritten one. Hearts and flowers over the black and white account of dark days ahead. I climb back into bed and turn off the lights for the second time tonight, thinking of the boy whose first name I don't know, feeling guilty for thinking of him when there are bigger things ahead. Somehow, amid all the conflicting emotions, sleep grabs my hand and pulls me under, and then everything unwritten is gone. I hope you guys liked the second segment of the book, and I guess I will probably see you guys tomorrow for chapters maybe 7 to 10 or 7 to 11. Also, let me know if you guys are enjoying this book. Should I continue it? Should I stop? Give it a thumbs up, or even I'll go ahead and add in my Instagram and go ahead and DM me on there. And let me know if you guys are enjoying it. So, thank you so much, and I'll see you guys tomorrow.